This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Support Supplements. Each dose of Berkeley Life delivers the bioactive nutrients found in nitrate-rich plant-based diets to enhance our body's production of nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is a vital signaling molecule in our cardiovascular health, which was brought to prominence when it was awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine in 1998. We all make nitric oxide in our bodies, but as we age, it starts to diminish naturally, requiring intervention through diet, lifestyle, or supplementation. Just two capsules of Berkeley Life daily provide the dietary nitrate equivalent of 5 ounces of spinach and can support energy levels, maintain healthy blood pressure levels, and improve general circulation. It's the professional-grade nitric oxide supplement that I recommend and prescribe for my patients. This is only available from healthcare providers. To get your Berkeley Life professional supplements, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. You can also get Berkeley Life's patented nitric oxide test strips to conveniently test your own nitric oxide levels safely and easily at home. That's drhoffmanstore.com. for Berkeley Life Nitric Oxide Supplements.
Welcome to Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for downloading these podcasts. You can subscribe to our newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com and sign up. It's free. Comes out weekly around every Thursday. You can unsubscribe at any time. If you'd like to make an appointment with me, call the office, 212-779-1744. Again, that's 212-779-1744. You can email me with any questions or topics of interest at radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. And I've got an email question from Terry, which is great. Terry writes, "Dear Layla, what is the difference between NR and NMN? NR and NMN. These are the NAD precursors, and let's see how they measure up. NR, which is nicotinamide riboside, and NMN is nicotinamide mononucleotide, right? So nicotinamide riboside is NR, and nicotinamide mononucleotide is NMN. That's what we're going to be calling it. And both are precursors to NAD, which is nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. NAD, you know, is the stuff you need for life, for energy. So here's what we know, and I'm going to dive into it, Terry. NR is the most efficient precursor to NAD, but its cousin, molecule NMN, is raising eyebrows as the new kid on the block in the field of aging. Okay, so this is from Elysium Health, which is a nice place where they explain a lot of science. So, and they make a beautiful analogy, which really makes it easy to understand, and that's why I chose this to explain it to you. Moving into a new home is never easy, right? Just because a large bed can fit inside a bedroom doesn't mean it'll fit through the door of the room. So it's typical for beds to come in parts that need to be disassembled to make it through a door and then reassembled once inside. The same can be said for nicotinamide mononucleotide, a molecule called NMN for short. And NMN is a precursor to NAD, meaning it becomes NAD through a series of chemical transformations. NAD is a coenzyme that living things cannot survive without, and it is critical for everything from energy and metabolism and even sleep. But levels of NAD naturally fall with age, making it and NMN, as a result, crucial to the science of aging. I remember back in the day, Dr. Atkins used to advertise on his radio show. Do you remember his radio show called Your Health Choices? I remember before I became a nutritionist, I used to plan my lunch hour in my previous career around his radio show so I could listen to it every day. And he was always advertising about NAD and NADH and how important it is for energy. And he was selling it as a supplement at the time. So that's the NAD that we're talking about. So coming back to comparing NR with NMN, NMN is like a large bed that movers are trying to get through a door. It doesn't enter the cell easily. One way for NMN to enter the cells is for it to chemically transform into another molecule, which is nicotinamide riboside, NR, before it can enter the cell. NR has earned a name for itself as the ultimate precursor to NAD, as it takes the most efficient route to NAD and can enter the cell as is. You've heard Dr. Hoffman talk at length about nicotinamide riboside, NR, especially in a product called True Niagen, among other nicotinamide riboside products, because a lot of them are coming out. You can find them on Fullscript. Go to drhoffman.com and go to the store. You will find it there, nicotinamide riboside. Very important. So NR is better. It's earned a name for itself as the ultimate precursor to NAD, as it takes the most efficient route to NAD and can enter the cell as is. It's not a bed that is too large. It could fit easily through the door into the bedroom, meaning it could go easily into the cell. NMN, meanwhile, sometimes becomes NR before entering the cell, where it chemically transforms back to NMN and then ultimately becomes NAD. A lot of acronyms here. We've learned that NR leads to NAD and that it also has its own pathway. Pardon me. It has its own pathway, NR does, that bypasses various steps other NAD precursors have to take. In early 2019, though, new research revealed NMN might only have to become NR for certain cell types, as NMN can enter cells in the small intestine of mice. It's unclear how this will translate to humans, if at all. But it's teed up NMN as the newer kid on the block of aging research, making many wonder, how does it stack up against NR, nicotinamide riboside? So, NR versus the NMN molecule. Pitting NR and NMN against each other is, for now, somewhat of a moot point because the two molecules have never been studied side by side. The biggest and most obvious difference between NMN and NR is size. NMN is simply larger than NR. It's the bed that's too big that you got to disassemble, right? So NMN is simply larger than NR, meaning it often needs to be broken down to fit into the cell. NR, when compared to other NAD precursors, like nicotinic acid or nicotinamide, reigns supreme in efficiency. And that's why NR is such a big deal. But give NMN a new door, one it can fit through, and it's a whole new game. This is where cellular transporters come into play. Transporters are proteins that are doors on the cell. They allow molecules to enter the cell without needing to chemically transform. The latest research from Shinichiro Imai, MD, PhD, a professor of developmental biology at Washington University in St. Louis, identified a transporter that allows NMN to get into the cell without converting to NR. The catch? The transporter is only on cells located in the gut of mice and only works in the presence of sodium ions. NR, however, has been shown to enter cells in the liver, muscle, brain tissue of mouse models. But again, the two have never been matched up against each other in a way that can truly identify one as superior to the other. So, why we need NR and NMN? So you might be wondering, why should I care? What does it matter that these molecules get into the cell a certain way and how they do it? NR and NMN are both beneficial because they elevate levels of NAD, which decline with age. NAD is vital to metabolism, turning nutrients into energy, and it also activates sirtuins. Sirtuins are a set of proteins that regulate longevity. We all get NAD in our bodies thanks to our diet by consuming foods with NAD precursors in them. While NR and NMN can be found in trace amounts in various foods, though one can't eat enough of anything to boost NAD levels back to youthful levels. And as a result, supplementing with an NAD precursor can help mitigate the decline. Supplementing NR and NMN could provide other myriad benefits as a result of boosting NAD. NR supplementation in mice, for example, has proven beneficial for things like mitochondrial function, cognition, and liver disease, while even extending the lifespan of mice. And NMN supplementation in mice has shown improved blood flow and endurance, as well as other age-associated physiological decline, like low energy, weight gain, and loss of insulin sensitivity. At the end of the day, though, what we know is that when compared to other precursors, NR is the most efficient of the bunch. The latest research on NMN could prime it to be the next great vitamin B3, which is niacin vitamin B3. But for now, more research in humans is needed to better understand how beneficial it could be and how it might stack up against NR. One possibility is that each precursor could provide varying benefits depending on the target, especially if transporters, like the recently discovered one in the gut, are only available in specific cells in the body. For now, there are a lot of unknowns about which doors may open for these precursors in the future and what they could open up to, which only makes the field of aging research more exciting. This is from ElysiumHealth.com. Wonderful, wonderful website. Terry, I hope this sheds some more light on the difference between NMN and NR. And thank you very much for that very thoughtful question. For those of you who'd like to email me questions, topics of interest, things you want me to take a deeper dive into, email me to radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. I want to talk to you about another topic today, body shape versus BMI as risk predictor in women. The experts say that the bathroom scale is not everything. So, carrying extra belly fat, that is, having an apple body shape, was tied to higher mortality risk for postmenopausal women, researchers reported. Compared with women of normal weight, as defined by BMI, and possessing no central obesity, as measured by waist circumference, those with normal weight who did have central obesity, meaning abdominal fat, right, had about a 30% increased risk for all-cause mortality. And this was in JAMA Open Network by Wei Bao, MD, PhD of the University of Iowa, and his colleagues. Yeah, 30% increased risk of all-cause mortality if you're an apple shape carrying weight in the middle, even if you are of normal weight as defined by BMI. BMI is body mass index, and a BMI of between about 18 and 24.9 is defined as normal weight. Below 18 is described as underweight, and any BMI of 24.9 and above is considered overweight. And a BMI of 30 and above is considered obese. So central obesity, body weight, abdominal fat, is a bigger determinant of health, even if you're a normal weight. In addition to all-cause mortality risk, normal weight women with central obesity also had significantly elevated risk for cancer, as well as cardiovascular mortality. Central obesity was also associated with increased all-cause mortality in women who were overall overweight or obese versus normal weight women without abdominal obesity. On the other hand, women with overweight without central obesity saw slightly reduced all-cause mortality risk, playing into the idea of the obesity paradox. Women with overweight, as defined by BMI, may have a greater amount of gluteofemoral adipose tissue. You know what we're talking about, hips and waist, ladies. If you carry your weight in your hip, if you're a hip and thigh girl as opposed to an apple-shaped girl, if you're a hip and thigh girl instead of a belly girl, it's associated with an improved metabolic and cardiovascular risk profile, which could partially explain the obesity paradox. So if you take two women who are both overweight or obese, one is an apple shape, one is a pear shape, which is the hip and thigh, the pear shape. The pear shape is better off than the apple shape woman. The findings challenge the current paradigm that measurement of abdominal fat is not recommended for individuals with normal BMI. Listen, I never liked BMI as an indicator for weight. I like body composition, meaning finding the percentage of body fat in your body, no matter where that body fat is. If it's greater than 30, the percentage of body fat in your body, we call that metabolic obesity. But right now, we're talking about central obesity, abdominal obesity, as measured by waist circumference. So what they did, the researchers, waist circumference used to determine central obesity was measured at enrollment. Central obesity was considered a waist circumference of over 88 centimeters. That's 34 and a half inches, ladies. That's 34 and a half inches. Obesity was defined by classic BMI categories. Normal weight, as I told you, 18 to 24.9. And is normal. Overweight is 24.9 to 29.9, and obesity is everything over 29.9 or 30. Among about 2.6% of all women of normal weight possessed abdominal obesity, central obesity. These women tended to be older, non-white, and with less education and income. That's interesting. These women were also less likely to use menopausal hormones and to exercise. There's a reason for weight gain. Several mechanisms may underlie this elevated mortality weight in normal weight women with central obesity, the researchers explain. One may be the harmful combination of visceral fat and a lack of protective muscle mass. Previous studies have shown that excessive visceral fat, the visceral fat is that central obesity, that fat that is in between your organs, between your liver, your pancreas, your stomach, all of that, between your organs. This excessive visceral fat is associated with insulin resistance, hyperinsulinemia, dyslipidemia, and inflammation, which are risk factors for cardiovascular disease and several types of cancer, including breast cancer and colon cancers. Future research is needed to develop and test the effectiveness of interventions to reduce risk owning to excess body fat among people with normal weight central obesity, they suggested. Despite these interesting findings, the commentators highlighted that this study was exclusive to postmenopausal women and therefore cannot be generalized to men or younger women, and realize what happens postmenopause. If you were a hip and thigh girl, if you were a pear-shaped girl, you're now becoming more of an apple-shaped woman, an android versus gynoid shape, an apple shape versus a pear shape. And that's when it becomes dangerous. That's when our risk factors increase, right? So this is interesting. You want to make sure that your waist circumference, here's a way to go. You could take your height. How to determine if you're at health risk, you could do a waist to hip ratio. And what that means is you take your waist circumference and your hip circumference in inches, you divide the waist number by your hip number. So say you have a waist of 28 and hips of 36, you divide that number. You are at low risk if you are at 0.80 or lower. You are at moderate risk if you are at 0.81 to 0.85. And you're definitely at high risk if that waist divided by hip in inches number is a 0.86 or higher. That's 0.86 or higher. That's how you know. The other way that you could do is you could take your weight, your height in inches but your waist in inches should be less than half of your height. So if your height is 66 inches, for example, your waist circumference should not be greater than 33. That would be a way to go. But that's not as defining as doing the waist to hip ratio. All right. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.